comments on what I consider to be some deleterious aspects of the environment. The OTC, if constructed as conceived, will lie within 1/2 mile of major wetlands that border and protect Delaware Bay. If you refer to the booklet, page 13, for a map. As discussed below, I believe it'll be a real environmental risk to wildlife within those wetlands. And as such, the application does not comply with section 6904 of the Delaware Code, which calls for water and air pollution abatement. Now, I'm going to abbreviate my comments in the interest of time. So the fact is the OTC development proposes or conceives, as currently stands, 89.8 acres of impervious surface based on the areas of buildings, pads, and parking lots. So about 78.5% of the total land area. This is a very high percentage. So this concept creates a problem. Managing the huge volume of polluted stormwater that will be washed off rooftops and parking surfaces. At the same time, the paucity of pervious surface limits potential solutions. Now, the January 1, 2014 stormwater management regulations for Delaware define 2.7 inches of rain within a 24-hour period as an event with a 99% probability of taking place on a yearly basis in Sussex County. I validated this analysis by examining daily rainfall records for the National Weather Service at Georgetown, Delaware between May 1, 2005 and April 30, 2015. There were 12 instances of daily rainfall equaling or exceeding 2.7 inches during this 10-year period. There may actually be several more instances if rainfall in a total 24-hour period is divided between two successive days. So based on the area of impervious surface conceived for the OTC, a rain event generating 2.7 inches will produce over 880,000 cubic feet of water, a volume that would fill an area of over 40 acres to an average depth of 6 inches. To put this in further perspective, the planned area of roofed retail space is only 19 acres. And since almost half of the 12 cited rain events represent between 3 and 7.59 inches at Georgetown, it is clear that much larger volumes of water will require containment if the OTC is to avoid exacerbation of flooding that already occurs to adjacent properties and sensitive wetlands. It may be possible to manage the volume of stormwater runoff by a combination of surface bioretention swales and a very large network of subterranean stormwater detention vaults. And we have confidence the Sussex Conservation District will enforce all applicable stormwater regulations for volume, sediment, nitrogen, and phosphorus. However, the total quality of this stormwater will be difficult to control. Typical pollutants expected in stormwater runoff from roofs and parking lots include heavy metals, largely from automotive sources, including cadmium from brake linings, copper from brake pads, and zinc from tires, as well as hydrocarbons from coolants, gasoline, oils, lubricants, and asphalt sealants, and also chloride from de-icing compounds, as well as sediment from atmospheric deposition. So the issue in controlling these pollutants will be the sandy soils that make up almost 50% of the OTC project area. But while these sandy soils facilitate water infiltration to the underlying aquifer and constitute an area of excellent aquifer recharge, the sandy soils do little to retard the movement of pollutants, including heavy metals, into the aquifer. And I might add that in the case of subterranean stormwater detention vaults, they'll be sitting just a few feet above the aquifer. This is evident from maps generated using the USDA NRCS Webb Soil Survey to query the chemical properties of area soils, and I refer to the map on page 12 in the accompanying booklet. The Sussex Conservation District and the new stormwater regulations do not control heavy metal or hydrocarbon pollutants. So bioretention swales can capture some of these pollutants effectively if they are appropriately vegetated, supplemented with soils with high levels of organic matter, and maintained over the total lifetime of the property. The maintenance should include removing mowed and potentially contaminated foliage, fertilizing, watering during drought, and controlling sediment buildup. However, it's important to note that even optimally prepared bioretention swales do not function well during cold seasons when plants are dormant. Subterranean stormwater detention vaults also offer the potential to retain some pollutants if the sediments that collect in these vaults are retained and have the capacity to bind pollutants. However, we expect that much of the sediment will come from dust deposited from neighboring properties that have similar sandy soils with low binding capacities for heavy metals and hydrocarbons. Note that these detention vaults will also require regular inspection and flushing to remove accumulated sediments. And this will be required over the lifetime of the project, whether that project is commercially viable or whether it becomes vacant and derelict. So even low concentrations of heavy metal pollutants, less than 2 parts per billion, for example, can affect animal behavior and fertility if they reach the Great Marsh and surrounding wetlands, either by uncontrolled surface runoff or via the aquifer. Moreover, pollutants can be concentrated in biofilms and ingested directly by animals. So amphibians, reptiles, and fish are especially at risk. So in conclusion, I do not agree with the statement by the applicant's lawyer that no adverse impact is expected. And we therefore submit the requested change in zoning should be denied because the plan fails to incorporate features expected in an environmentally sensitive area, for example, reduced impervious surface and expanded buffers, and furthermore, fails to provide enough information to determine if minimal environmental safeguards incorporated in the design are adequate. So, in final conclusion, this may be a conception, but I recommend contraception.
Thank you.
Rich Barrasso will sum up for the group.
My name is Rich Barrasso. I'm a resident of Red Fox Run, been a property owner, taxpayer in Sussex County for 13 years. I am the only thing that's between you and your adoring public. And so I'm going to be like the prolific New York Yankee closer. I will be brief, I will be bold, and I will be gone. First, I want to thank Attorney Witzel for representing the coalition. I want to thank all the members that spoke tonight, but more importantly is to thank you for the ability to participate in this type of public understanding and support of what you do. And it's greatly appreciated. I'm sure there were some arrows slung your way this afternoon and this evening. Again, we appreciate what you do, and I think it's more important now, instead of being repetitive and reviewing, is to hear from the public. So from a coalition standpoint, our portion is complete. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very
much.
Thank you. He just said you were done.
Yes, just a housekeeping. Thank you, Mr. Cole. Just a housekeeping matter, Mr. Moore.
See, he was not the closer.
Well, you better remind him again.
Mr. Moore, Mr. Lank, a housekeeping matter, if you would, please.
Yes.
I noted as I looked through my documents that tab 22 has been miscollated by my staff, and I would appreciate the opportunity to submit the CR1 zoning information rather than the C1 zoning information tomorrow, and I'll get those copies to council if that is satisfactory.
Yes.
Mr. President, is that okay with you?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Okay. Is there anyone else here that would like to speak in opposition to this matter? See a gentleman over here.
Better call him Mabel.
Pardon?
Well, you can't see. There she comes.
There you go.
Going on the age of the premise of age before beauty.
Yeah. Go, Mabel.
Why not have both?
I don't know. It was a good-looking man over there.
I am Mabel Granke, and I live in Rehoboth Beach. And I contend that this monstrosity of an application is also dangerous to the city of Rehoboth, the city of Lewis, and the city of Milton because of its impact. And my first reaction when I heard about this and saw the name of the developer, I'm sorry, I called it total destruction. And with that, what I want to emphasize with you is that you have been drummed at you the mantra that all you're supposed to consider is whether the CR1 zone is appropriate for this site. And I would suggest to you that there is no way to make that decision without taking into context the surrounding area and the cumulative impact that this represents in every aspect. Then I would like to suggest that the reason that there was a corridor conservation project between Route 16 and Five Points was because of the recognition by DelDOT that Five Points South from to Dowie Beach was lost in terms of corridor conservation or proper corridor conservation. And I agree with Mr. Arlott, Rehoboth can be a disaster at times in terms of traffic. Then I want to suggest to you that you need to look at reality. There are no extra transportation dollars floating around. And there are two major needs in the Route 1 corridor, which is our lifeline. And that is Route 24, which is going to have a new elementary school built opposite the existing middle school, is going to have Troop 7 come to Route 24. And I have also heard that the emergency services are coming
across
to Route 24.
My house.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I,
thanks.
Councilman George Cole stood not long ago at the intersection of Route 24 and Route 1 expressing his concerns about that dangerous, and it is a dangerous road.
Actually, I was a Photoshop. I wasn't really standing there. Okay. I was standing in Bethany Beach.
Oh, okay. Any way you slice it, Route 24. Route 24 is a dangerous road. And if you have these crucial public facilities, including young children, then that road needs to have the flow of any needed transportation dollars.
That's what I was talking about.
There is the recent talk about dear old Five Points. And we used to have the potential for an overpass there, but because of the lack of energy of moving that kind of thing forward, that opportunity may have been lost, as was recently pointed out, because of the fact that land has been taken over by private concerns, and eminent domain is expensive. Or, well, eminent domain doesn't have to be expensive, but purchase of land can certainly, right of way, can be expensive. So please, when you think about this and you have a very hard decision to make in terms of what you need to consider, but please, please consider the fact that there are two major things, as far as I'm concerned, that enter into a decision, and that's the public good and public safety. And this project represents neither. And I only hope that I understand that the field is now planted with corn. I hope it has a wonderful crop and that there are successive crops there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. There's a gentleman across the way that I... Yes, sir.
And he gets the credit for the first one being here today,
he
by the way.
He was first, yeah.
Yes,
get your A for that, or a star.
Been here since 11 o'clock waiting.
I'm John Vincent. I own the farm directly north of the development. And to borrow a phrase from a famous local book, I grew up Sussex. I don't live here permanently now. I live in Florida. And I come here to work on the farm. My son would be here with me, but he's working on the farm right now. We have four chicken houses, and I wanted to address the council in reference to two areas. One is environmental, the other is farming. So that you know, my farm comes right up along this edge. There's an existing hedgerow here now. I just spent about $220,000 buying an irrigation system that's going to bank right up along here. Now, we get a little bit of a northwest wind. Which way is the drift of that irrigation going to go? Somebody with a new Mercedes is going to call me up and say, hey, I would like a new paint job. That's not going to work real well. Now, right here at this corner, I'll show you a map which has, there's a better map of it over there, really is. As far as there's a little piece of woods right here. It's a triangular piece of woods. Right on the other side of it, there's four chicken houses. Mm-hmm. Now, those chicken houses were about $300,000 each. And you work on the load share program with Delaware Electric Co-op, and they turn your generators on and help supply electricity to keep everybody cool that's coming here to enjoy the beach and all this kind of stuff. But anyway, it won't be long before, when this woods is taken out, as you can see in this picture, there's no woods left there. Somebody's going to say, you know, I smell a chicken house.
They smell good.
And the first lady that goes into Victoria's Secret and says, what is that office smell? That's not going to work out real well. So I imagine there's going to come a day where I have to defend some lawsuits that happen by omission rather than commission. There's a lot of things that happen as a result of actions that are not really directly attributable to different things. Anyway, when right up here at the end of the road, there's a daycare center. Mm-hmm. And that was my grandmother's house, and it got sold, and they got Kristen's daycare center in there, and I ride past them little youngins, and they run out, and they want me to blow the horn on the combine or the tractor. They're all cute as little buttons. But, you know, part of farming is I might plant corn there. And a normal farming practice is you take and put ammonia into the head of your irrigation well, and you let the irrigation system put that ammonia out. Do you think I ought to put ammonia in the water with those little kids playing in the playground there? That's a consequence. I have to consider that. These little youngins didn't do anything to anybody. Their mom and dad's working, or they wouldn't be at the daycare center. So that kind of limits me right there. Well, last year I got this irrigation system in, and one of the neighbors came to me. His name's Don Clifton, and he's running a small packing operation. And he said, would you grow peas or beans? You've got this irrigation system. It's very, very nice, and you could put this in, and it augments your crop rotation. Everything worked, except for when I called Alan Corman and said, you know, I've got white mold on my lima beans. He said, John, I can take care of the white mold on the back end of the farm, but on the front end, I can't spray around the daycare center. Mm. Oh, okay, well, that limits me right there. So, you know, you kind of have to, you put this irrigation system in, and you say, well, how are you going to pay that $220,000? And you have all these ideas. But then in the implementation of it, suddenly there's some obstacles that come up that you have to consider, and you got to work around them. Now, if we're going to put in this shopping center, suddenly the whole side of this farm and this area right in here, which is a field in front of these chicken houses, a little small triangular field, it's going to be about useless. So there's some farming aspects, and the other side of it is, if you start trying to come down this road with a combine of any size or a dual-wheel tractor, you meet all kind of people. They want to wave at you. they have a lot of these people come down here only have one finger that they wave at. Other people don't. But just the farm traffic gets to be a real consideration. And then I was talking to Kenny Hopkins, and he said, you know, when they redo this road out here, this Route 1, they may take you all the way up to Route 16 before you can make a left-hand turn. I said, no. He said, yeah. Did you know when you go up to the Broad Kill River Bridge, that is a bridge, you know, it's very small, there's no shoulders on that bridge. There's no shoulder there. So when you pull out with that dual-wheel tractor that's doing 18 miles an hour and you think you're really flying, you should see what happens to the traffic in back of you when they run up on you and there's no shoulder. I don't know how there ain't more wrecks in the Broad Kill River right now. But traffic as it is, if you're running farm equipment, you learn to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and get your equipment on the other side of the Broad Kill River Bridge if you want a day without a lot of sweat. So that's just some of the farming aspects. As far as the environmental aspects, I build, design, and retrofit reverse osmosis desalinization and wastewater systems.
I'll be darned.
I hold 2 United States patents on wastewater processes. I work on a lot of cruise ships. And what Mr. Cole was driving down earlier with one of the environmental concerns, the road you were going down, there were environmental aspects that the folks who are advocating this development covered real easy. And one of them was the wastewater, the actual sewage water. We're sending that to Artesian. There you go. Well, that's good. Got that handle. It's going to Milton.
You can't. That's what
Artesian runs the Milton plant. Well, the Milton plant is antiquated.
No.
In regular.
Tidewater.
It's going to Tidewater?
No. Tidewater runs the Milton plant.
Okay. Well, whoever is running it, is it going to Milton?
No. Can't.
The spray irrigation main.
Up above, north of Milton, up probably.
We'll figure it out later. Keep on going.
Well, anyhow, as it stands, you're running 90,000 gallons of wastewater from wherever it's going, and you're starting off with a BOD load in that water of about 300 to 350 parts per million.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to gain heat in that, and it's going to degrade more. So by the time it gets to wherever or whatever treatment plant, you're going to be about 400, 450. So they're going to have more aeration time, and they're going to have more ability to handle sludge. Now, who wants somebody injecting sludge next to their home or their development? Y'all put your hands up. Mm-hmm. All once. But that'll be more sludge to handle. So whichever plant it goes to, you've got to consider, can that plant handle an additional 90,000 gallon hydraulic load and the BOD load, when I did a quick calculation, came up to 356 pounds per day of just BOD. So consequently, somebody's going to have to get more aeration, they're going to have to get more blower space, they're going to have to use more power, and there's going to be more sludge to handle. The next thing is we came up with the groundwater and we got this really good term. It's called groundwater recharge. You think, oh man, that's great. You can put up water in the ground, recharge it up. Well, if we look down here on the map where we're at, you can't really see, but right over on this corner of the property, I got the wrong board. Here we go. Right here on this corner, this is the headwaters to the drainage that comes out here on the Great Marsh. And it comes down through this woods. This is my farm here on the back end, and it comes way down through this woods, comes out kind of in a swampy area, goes right to here, turns around, goes down, meets this ditch, which is called Fisher Creek, and goes all the way out to Red Mill. Red Mill Creek comes around, goes right out to the Broadkill River, and then it goes to Roosevelt Inlet. Now, when we were talking about stormwater discharge and groundwater recharge, when we had the planning and zoning hearing, I came over and I just did a quick calculation. I said, well, if that development is 90 acres of impervious surface and we have a 4-inch rain, how much water would that be? It's about 9.5 million gallons. And this property is right at the head of that drainage. Now, how much water did we have last year? I went to University of Delaware. How much rainwater did we have at the harvest and rain station? Anybody got any idea? 43 inches.
Wow.
Almost 4 foot. So there was 100 million gallons of rainwater that fell on that 90 acres that had crops on it. Now it's all going to be asphalt or covered over, the major portion of it. And how much time have we got for 100 million gallons of water to get in the ground? And how long is it going to take to get some of these contaminants, like Mr. Britt talked about, hydrocarbons, aromatics, aliphatics, ethylene glycol. Who knows about ethylene glycol? Antifreeze. Everybody knows about that.
Deadly.
Worst thing I ever seen about antifreeze? My uncle, Howard West, that's Charles West's brother.
Yeah.
Senator?
Yeah.
Charles West, his brother. Never saw him cry before till he spilled some antifreeze. His favorite rabbit dog run up there and licked that antifreeze.
Oh. And
dead's a hammer.
Oh.
It's very, very toxic. And if you listen to Mr. Britt, he started talking about measurements in parts per billion, not parts per million. The attorney who's the advocate for the project said, well, so there's, you know, a little bit of environmental concern here, and, you know, there's agricultural chemicals in there. Oh, no. There's not agricultural chemicals in there. I got 4 chicken houses, and I can't even use the chicken manure on the farm. That farm has never seen chicken manure since 2002. I don't even buy phosphates in the liquid nutrients that Southern States puts on because we've got enough. So we don't utilize. But you've got these aromatic and aliphatic hydrocarbons that come down there. How long does it take for them to break down?
Years.
God. So now out here on this drainage, here's this drainage coming right out. And then on the other side, right over here, is Weiss Chapel Church. And before you get to Weiss Chapel Church, there's a big drainage. And DelDOT, where's DelDOT?
Oh, boy.
There's a great big drainage. I get all of the drainage. I get all the drainage from right down here at the intersection of Route 88 all the way up almost to Weiss Chapel Church, and then it comes underneath the road through a big culvert pipe, cuts across my field, and I've spent, I'd say $5,000-$6,000 just putting stone down in the bottom.
Yeah.
That's the way my mom drove to church. She didn't want to drive out on the road, so she drove across the field. She said, John, I'll get stuck, so I couldn't have that. But anyway, all the road runoff comes down and goes through there, and guess what? It comes down right through this woods here. And you see, you can't see the first irrigation pond, but you can see the second one. And then it goes out on the marsh, comes out to a bigger pond, comes to a ditch, joins the ditch on the other side that comes from the drainage where this development's going to go, connects into Fisher Creek, goes out here, hits Red Mill, goes to Broadkill River, and then out. It's not very far away at all. Important thing of this was, when I was a boy, I never got to go in town and play baseball or run around or do this kind of stuff. I just had to live in the woods and do things. My sister used to walk me through the woods. We'd go in and catch baby eels at the outfall of the irrigation pond. American eels came up in there and spawned. And there'd be balls of them.
Fresh water.
Yeah, my sister left. I got busy. Then they took and they put the dual highway in. And the eels were gone. Disappeared. Not there. Have anything to do with the fact that there was now four lanes of traffic that I was getting to run off through, and that runoff was coming down through here? Well, at the time, I didn't know how to test water, and I didn't have a degree in biology or chemistry. I didn't know what to do, but I knew they weren't there. And out here on this marsh, there's what's called the old forked gut. Comes right off Red Mill Creek, and it comes up, and it breaks around Trumpeter Island. Comes to the north of it and goes to the south of it. It used to have an oyster bed right in there. It's gone. Used to be mussels all over that oyster bed. They're gone. Now, some of your responsibility, I mean, we've heard all kind of traffic, municipal studies about firemen and rescue people and retail stores and everything. This Great Marsh area was here before we got here. It's going to be here after we leave. How we leave it is more in your hands than anyone else's right now. I mean, I've planted filter strips. I've got, this is no longer a field. It's all woods all down along here. There's more planted so that no runoff can get down into these areas for these agricultural chemicals. You got to try to prevent that if you can. But everybody's trying to do their part, but as you let this development come and people begin to ask questions, well, what happened? What was it? These are the things I'm telling you about are not things that you can put statistical numbers to, that you can't just round up and do a study on and say, well, there was X amount there. But it keeps, there's different life forms that keep disappearing. They keep just, they're not there anymore. Well, what happened? Well, nobody saw it, and everybody gets up in the morning, eat your Wheaties, drink your coffee, go to work. You don't think about it, but it keeps on degrading. Up here in the Broadkill River, one thing I was making a mention of, that this wastewater went to Milton. I've got marsh up here, and there was a surveyor, longtime Sussex County surveyor, his name is Charlie Murphy. Everybody knew Charlie. And Charlie knew, well, you've got folks here from Paintersville. He helped settle the Dr. Painter estate. It was done over here at Farmers Bank. So he had a lot of history. Well, I had him survey some marsh for me. And he came back to me and he said, John, said, I got some news for you. I said, what's that? He said, 20 foot of your property's gone. Mm-hmm. I said, what do you mean 20 foot? Who took it? He said, John, it's gone. I said, what do you mean gone? Well, what he meant was that due to the amount of chemicals, flow, detergents, wake action, whatever else out here in the Broadkill River, the river has become more shallow. And it's washed away a lot of the bank. And a lot of your little creatures that lived along there, like fiddler crabs and these horseshoe crabs that everybody's trying to protect so that the shorebirds migrating back from South America have something to eat when the horseshoe crabs lay their eggs. All these things are disappearing along there, including your land. And a lot of the chemicals like ABS, ABS is a term for measuring detergents. You can go out there in the creek and you can pick up sometimes 15, 20 parts per million of detergents. So as that happens, you expand that soil. You know, it gets in, it loosens things up, and it makes it easier to break down. And so consequently, some of my land is out here in the Delaware Bay. And if y'all fly out of Philadelphia, you'll be able to see it, because you'll fly out and you'll come right down and come over to Lewis, and you can look down, and here's this huge alluvial fan that's out there. Well, it's also soil from Red Mill Creek, Fisher Creek, and all these, Canary Creek down here going on back road to Lewis. All of it's washing out. And all these consequences, nobody really is measuring or being able to put definitive numbers to, but it's happening and you can see it. And that's the thing you kind of got to look at with putting in all this much impervious surface. You know, that would be the largest amount of impervious surface, I believe, till you get into Lewis. Where is that much more concrete? You know, or asphalt or whatever, in one concentric spot. So anyway, I think that's about all I got to say. I appreciate y'all's time.
Okay, thank you much.
Thank you, sir.
And there was another, Mr. Hopkins.
That's your road there.
I'm Kenny Hopkins. My wife, Susan, and I own the farm directly behind where a proposed Overbrook Town Center is to be built. When you literally say something's going to be in your front door, I would literally have it right out my front door if it's approved. I am the son of a third-generation farmer. I have grown up learning about the land and how to make it grow. I have been raised to appreciate it. I have spent many hours in the milk house with my father and endless hot summer days in the field baling hay. I've learned at an early age that the ground is only as useful as we allow it to be. The more we allow it to grow, the more it gives back to us. Sussex County has always been known as a farming community, and it's important that we continue to educate the community about the importance of farming. But more important, we must preserve it. We need to save the land in order to allow our children to see how their food grows and prosper from Mother Nature, through Mother Nature. With preserving the farmland, you will be also preserving the wildlife. Where the Overbrook Town Center wants to be built is in the middle of a prosperous wildlife habitat. The Great Marsh is located closely behind where the town center wants to be built. With the runoff alone, this great natural habitat will be compromised. With any massive development or mall that is built, the wildlife vacates the area. Their once habitat becomes invaded by strip malls, parking lots, trash that will soon accumulate the surrounding areas. When you have a farm like I have, along with my family, you should be able to hunt anywhere on the property as long as you're 100 yards from a new structure. With the new construction of the Overbrook Town Center, my life will be changed forever. I will be giving up the ability to hunt the front part of my property and more. It is a state law enforced by Delaware Fish and Wildlife that you cannot hunt within 100 yards of an occupied structure or drop shot on buildings or people. With the building of the Overbrook Town Center, it is interfering with the private lives, not only of myself, but the surrounding farms of John David Vincent and Tom Robinson. Also, the way we do farming, the Vincent farm, the Robinson farm, and myself have to be changed the way we have been farming for years. Alan Corman, the local crop duster business owner, stated that ending under FAA regulations, there will be no longer be able to spray the fields because it is not permitted to fly over the proposed shopping center. This will not only hurt all of the neighboring farmers of the proposed project, but it will also hurt the local business in Sussex County that rely on the crops. Mr. Corman also stated that he will lose several thousands of dollars of revenue, as well as he will no longer be able to crop dust our farms. My home is located where the town center wants to be built. The house that I am living in was built in 1860. My wife and I worked hard to remodel and preserve its history. This has been our first home together, and this is where we raised our daughter, Natalie. My daughter has been able to grow up in a home where farming, wildlife, and appreciation of the earth has always been important. She was always able to play in the yard, not have to worry about oncoming traffic or strangers. Natalie could play with our dogs in the field, take them to the back of the ponds to swim. She was able to be a child. Both my wife and I would like to pass this family farm down to her through generations. We want her to teach her kids about the land and the wildlife living on it. But I'm concerned that if the town center were to be built, we will not be able to do that. I'm concerned that the family farm will be lost, just like the land in front of it. Thank you.
Quick question, if I may, Mr. President, because I'm looking at the map that we have in our packet.
Mm-hmm.
And I presume that's his parcel. Would that be correct?
With the long line there. My part, yeah. All the way right to
let me show you what I've got here. Okay. This is the parcel.
Yes.
And this is your hand. So does your driveway go through
right,
this
right through the middle of it?
Yeah.
Okay, that was the question that I had. So do you have an easement currently?
Yes. Right now.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Is there anyone else?
Thank you.
Sir?
Oh, gosh.
And, you know, at the beginning when we gave our rules of procedure, we did ask if people try not to repeat other things.
Not
and it's
repeat.
Okay to say ditto, too, if you
agree. I won't say either, I promise.
Okay.
Mr. President, members of the council, I'm Jeff Stone, and my wife and I are residents of Oyster Rock, and I thank you for the opportunity to join with my colleagues and neighbors and to voice my objection to the development of the proposed Overbrook Town Center. Early in my career, before I was to make a major presentation, a mentor of mine said, just remember, when you're putting together your presentation, the mind cannot absorb what the seat cannot endure. Your seats have endured a very long afternoon, and I appreciate that. I'll try not to extend it. Once again, the county council is confronted with a land use decision that could well change the face and character of a major area of the county and have serious negative impacts on the lives and properties of thousands of current residents. The question facing the council is whether CR1 zoning is appropriate for the site proposed for this development and if it's a suitable place for the high density uses permitted in such zoning. When all the facts concerning this proposed rezoning are carefully examined, I'm confident the decision to deny will be determined to be the proper course of action. You've heard the litany of detrimental impacts a development of this magnitude may have. The list is long. The cost of new infrastructure, traffic, loss of open space, negative impact on natural resources, aquifer recharge, runoff from a huge impervious area, overbuilding, excess retail space, not to mention unnecessary sprawl development, public safety, the impact on values of properties. You've heard competing arguments as to whether this development is in compliance with strategies for state policies and spending, and you've heard arguments as to whether it's in compliance with the county comprehensive plan. I've written you several letters in opposition to the proposal that speak to in detail these issues. So today I want to raise another issue, and that is my perception of what the role of a governing body is. It's my strong belief that government must have a holistic vision for what its community will look like and function, and how to nurture and grow that in a sustainable manner. It then embodies these principles and values in regulation and uses them to ensure that the future development complements and improves their community's quality of life, not degrades it. Comprehensive plans and zoning ordinances are two of the tools you use to carry this load. The introduction to the Sussex County Comprehensive Plan provides an unambiguous guide to future development. It states, Sussex County encourages appropriate types of development in compatible locations at suitable densities. The county also emphasizes quality of life and promotes conservation in community design. Over the years, numerous development in the area surrounding this proposed development have been reviewed and approved under the principles embodied in the comprehensive plan and the regulations contained in the zoning code. The words in the comprehensive plans are the words of the governing body. They're your words. You may not have penned them, although, Mr. Cole, I think you were the only council member that did the 2008 plan. But you might choose different words if you're authoring a plan today, but they are currently and have been for a long time
your words, the words that embody the ideals and vision of Sussex County government regarding development. Over the years, those who created these new developments and the thousands of current residents who invested in the homes in these developments have relied on those words, the representations made, and the actions taken by the governing body. The county, through its regulatory processes, has determined that the area from the Nassau Bridge north has developed primarily as a low-density mix of residential and agricultural uses, complemented by small, local-oriented businesses. In my opinion, by encouraging, permitting, and supporting this type of development, a bond of trust has been created between the governing body and the residents. The county comprehensive plan describes the proposed development site as a combination of lands, environmentally sensitive, low density, whatever, with a zoning designation of AR, the lowest AR1, the lowest density development zoning in the code. For miles around, the zoning and uses are agricultural, light density residential, and a scattering of small business clusters. The closest urban centers are Lewis and Milton, both significant distances away. If polled, how many of the current residents of Covington Chase and Oyster Rock and Painter's Mill, the people here, how many would say they really wanted to live next door to a major urban shopping mall, but they settled instead for a low-density rural lifestyle in their current community? I suspect not many. I'm sure that for a large majority, as in my own case, this was not our first home purchase, and we all went house hunting with very specific ideas of where we wanted to live. We made our choices based on the statements made by the governing body in the adopted comprehensive plan and zoning ordinances and by the development pattern already permitted. We trusted that the governing body will keep its word. This brings us full circle to the question facing the council, whether the proposed rezoning is appropriate for the site proposed for this development. It's not just a question of does the site meet the general parameters of zoning or comprehensive plans. The question is, what's the governing body's vision for the community? And will it adhere to the representations previously made? Will a change to high density uses on this site promote the betterment and orderly growth of the county and Sussex community at large? Will a change to high density development promote the health, safety, and welfare of the community at large? Will a change to high density development make Sussex County a more vibrant, livable place to live, work, and visit? In my opinion, clearly no. It's the responsibility, in my opinion, of government to protect the interest of all citizens of the community. Approving this rezoning would clearly break the implied bond that the county has created with thousands of its citizens through its regulation process and espoused by the goals explicitly stated in the comprehensive plan to protect their quality of life, not just in the immediate vicinity of the development, but throughout the county. I ask and encourage you, as the governing body, to protect the interest of your community as a whole, strengthen the bond with your residents, and uphold the principles embodied in the comprehensive plan by rejecting this rezoning request. Thank you for your patience.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Kiel. And I see someone in the back.
I'll be the fastest of everyone. My name is Tara Pride. My name's Tara Pride. Couple of addresses. My home is 29446 White's Neck Way. My business is 13849 Steamboat Landing Road, Milton, Delaware. Aside from being a homeowner, this could make our business of 44 years non-existent anymore if we lose the cross over. In front of Steamboat Landing, all of our customers with their giant RVs, if they can't turn off of Route 1 where they've been turning all these years, and they got to go all the way on that little circle thing with their big up to 40-footers, and then if say they want to leave us and go to 16 and then go back to Lewis, they're just going to pick another campground. And I mean, I was born and raised here. I don't even know how many generations, but my great-great-grandmother was here, been here. My oldest son has been here more than most of the people that have spoke. So it's important for my business and I support Kenny and all the farmland. And I think one thing great for the community, if it goes through and overpass and there's no more Steamboat Landing, I think a center such as a skating rink, bowling alley, something not just shopping, but something of interest, even like a center for retired people to do an activity. Because in the winter, a lot of people are moving here, but in the winter, I think it's kind of boring. But so I guess that's all I have to say.
Okay.
But thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Before I ask for someone else to speak, could we see a show of hands of those who oppose the project?
Can we respectfully ask why we wait till the end of the meeting to do this?
We don't always do it. So, Rob, do you mind helping Kent here?
Sure. I don't know if we need a number.
Yeah.
It's pretty much everybody. I don't need it. I don't think it counts necessary. We don't do a head count. We do it.
Right.
Why do it? It's wasting time.
You got a game name. There's ACG. Change your mind.
It means nothing. So I'll be okay.
Steve has a picture.
It's a lot of people.
She doing taking
them? Yeah, take it. Is that?
Rob, what?
Well, I'm a Democrat. I can do that.
What the heck does that mean?
Oh my God!
This is a waste to come. Let's go. We don't count this. I know.
It's got to be quite a bit.
Keep your hands up if you want to.
Yeah.
People come in with the TV and take pictures.
Apparently, Mr. Whit Rob told the people expect it.
Okay.
It's going to be on Facebook.
I just.
Okay. Okay, thank you. You can put your hands down. And we acknowledge that there were some of the people have left, too. So we do know that, acknowledge that. Okay, is there anyone else that would like to speak?
Come on down.
You weren't sticking your hand up very high. I was having a hard time seeing it.
I'm not usually shy. Mr. President, members of council, thank you for the opportunity. My name is Marion Jones. I live at 411 Behringer Avenue in Milton. A little bit of history. I grew up in Rehoboth Beach, like Councilman Cole. My family left our beach house in 1986.
So that's where you went. I was wondering.
Yes, when the congestion and sprawl from both the city and Route 1 were just too much to bear. I have been in the area long enough to see the problems that have occurred traffic-wise from Five Point South. I can only encourage you at this time, with a new development and a new opportunity, to make sure that the same problem does not occur Five Points North. However, that's not why I'm here today. As the mayor of Milton, I would like to address the issue of public safety as it relates to this project. In truth, Milton has no contiguous lands attached to this project, but that does not mean the proposed development will not have an impact on our town. All main arteries through Milton are state-maintained roads. These roads already need infrastructure attention for drainage problems, traffic flow, and safety concerns at our two main intersections, Routes 5 and 16, and 16 and Mulberry Street. Route 5 South is already used as a corridor directly into the Long Neck area, as well as a way around the southbound Route 1 traffic. Surely this council can recognize Route 5 could also become nothing more than a connector to Route 88, and thus a shortcut to the Overbrook Town Center. At the very least, I respectfully request this council expand the traffic studies outside of the perimeter of the required PLUS review, which studies only three intersections in either direction of the project. The present information derived from such a narrow DLDOT study does not begin to address what impact this could have on Milton and our quality of life. Before you go any further, you have the capability to request more extensive studies. You have the opportunity to gather all the information available to you before making your decision. Consideration for this project is more than the proposed developer having his I's dotted and his T's properly crossed. Even if their plan meets all requirements, you have the chance. No, you have the obligation to listen to your constituents. Listen, and please listen to the voices of the hundreds, if not thousands, of people who will be both directly and indirectly affected by your decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to speak? I'm seeing one more hand over here. Yeah.
Good evening. My name is Rosemary Hurst, and I've lived in Painter's Mill with my husband, Tom, for 10 years. Now, I like to shop, but I've seen in 10 years shops open and close. And if I could quote Mr. Hudson said that he has 100 employees, and he has lots more jobs, but he can't find people that want to work. What are they going to do? Where are they going to find the people that want to keep that place going? You know, who's going to look the farm? If that flops, who's going to look at these farmers, these wonderful men over here and all around us? Who's going to look them in the eye and their children and their grandchildren and say, we made a mistake? Thank you.
Thank you. Now, is there anyone else? I do not see any other.
Oh, my God, another one.
Who's coming?
Now,
I'm going to be quick on the sold next time. It's good.
Jay Koenig, I live in Oakwood Village. I guess the point I'm not clear about is I keep on hearing this $8 million figure being thrown around that the OTC is going to contribute to the overpass. Listening a little closer, I had heard two other things, and one of those things was up to $8 million. So it's not $8 million in the bank, it's maybe $8 million. And then I heard them say that they were only going to be responsible up to Route 1, not really for the overpass. So that could considerably cut down that $8 million to maybe $4 million, maybe $2 million. I don't know. You guys need to find that out.
Yeah, I believe the statement was, because I asked the clarification question, that it was to do the standard improvements along Route 1 for the entrances that DLDOT would require, in addition up to $8 million towards the overpass.
It's not $8 million. It's up to $8 million with a handshake and a wink.
Can we get your name again? I couldn't quite get it.
Pardon me?
Your name?
Jay Koenig.
Thank you.
Okay. And anyone else want to speak? Going. There's no one else that wants to speak at this point, Mr. President. And if there's questions from any of the council.
Some folks.
Any questions from council? Any questions from council?
Yes.
Mrs. Deaver.
One of us had said, did you want to hear from DLDOT at the end?
That was a long time. We already heard from them, though.
Well, all right, and that was a suggestion. I'm just repeating it. I'm just saying.
Anything else from council?
I think, Mr. President, I would agree that if DLDOT wanted to respond to the opposition's remarks, then perhaps we should allow for that, because I know I would have a couple another questions or two regarding that as well. But that would be your prerogative.
Do you have any additional information?
I know they're willing.
You had nothing.
Do we have any additional information?
No, not really. A question would be, we had opposition's traffic impact concerns, and then with the two impact studies we had or the testimony, is there a way that you can analyze both of them and
give us some...
And tell us about 30 seconds, please.
We're not right now on the spot. I mean, we're going to leave the record open, I hope. We've had a lot here today, so that would be just...
If you would like us to respond
yes.
to...
Well, I'm just...
If you could respond to the report
they
from...
Would you want to respond to?
No, mm-hmm. I don't know. We had the opposition presented us a traffic mm-hmm. impact
yes.
and study,
we'll,
right?
We'll need a copy.
Huh?
Yes.
Okay, and then plus the others.
Mm-hmm. Well, the developer's report, we sent you a letter in September.
Right, uh-huh. okay. Uh-huh. And what are the comments then, I guess, of the opposition's?
Well, you haven't got a copy of it, have you?
Mm-hmm. We have not seen their written report.
I was going to say, could you review it? That's what I'm trying to find out. Could you review it and just give us some comments later on in writing of what your, you know, if you had any comments about
Certainly.
Their reports?
We can review compare their report it to Mr. Fugue. Send you a letter.
Yeah.
I asked for Delta to come up again because they were up during the time that the proponents were speaking, and it just sort of gave the impression that they were taking a side, and I know that you're not. So
we are not.
Very good.
Any more questions of DelDOT?
That's it.
No. Any more questions from council?
Was there any any testimony, Lawrence, from I know the Great Marsh is a big hunting site and an important part of the Atlantic Flyway and all that stuff. Was there any concern from anybody at DENREC about the possibility of this large commercial retail center and the lights and how it might affect?
Tell me what's so far the record or the plus comments.
Okay, which wasn't, I don't think anybody addressed
it. I wasn't present at the commission's public.
Okay. All right.
Any more questions of council?
The $8 million number, again, who has determined that number? Is that just something that the applicant has proposed to provide? Or is it something that in the event, I'm being hypothetical, that this applicant is approved for a CR1 zoning here, is that number, the $8 million number, is that a number that DelDOT determines? Who determines the $8 million number?
It just,
I have no. I assume it's between DelDOT and the developer.
We were right. told.
It's been
what DelDOT said. Between the two of them, I had a conversation, and it's kind of a... what they both agreed to, and a kind of gentleman's handshake, and that's where it is.
There is nothing in writing, Bill, about any kind of negotiations at this point. What is, tell us again, negotiations. What's happened?
I was not in whatever room the $8 million was first mentioned, but... Uh-huh.
Heard about it.
I have heard about it since. I'm not aware of a written document.
No.
And if I could just follow up briefly.
It's in the DelDOT. Response.
Well, yes, it's mentioned there, but I don't think we have a written agreement.
There's no agreement yet.
No.
Okay, that's what we're trying to
find
out.
And is that typical at this stage that it would be just the discussions?
Yes.
So it would not be typical to have an agreement at this stage. Right. Is that correct? Okay.
This is Mark Cote. Yeah, I was just going to clarify that the $8 million is in the TIS letter as one of the, you know, recommendations to your council that if you approve the rezoning and the project moves forward, then that's one of the conditions.
We can't place conditions.
No.
Okay. We can't place
conditions. And then...
It would be a condition in the plan.
Yes. And so that at this point, it's basically a requirement for them to enter into an agreement
mm-hmm.
if it moves forward, but they certainly wouldn't sign an agreement to give us $8 million when they don't even know if they have a
That's
project.
Correct.
Well, can't you place conditions on what you're doing? You're part of it. I mean, if the $8 million happens, then, I mean, you have...
Again,
you'll make sure
there needs,
that
right, there needs to be sure. an overpass, mm-hmm. so they'll be spending that money.
I'm sorry, go ahead, sir.
No, I was just going to say, in the reason why I believe it's up to $8 million is that if it's then $9 million, $10
million, mm-hmm.
that there's a cap and that they're not held to some open-ended agreement. So
okay.
it's up to $8 million. If they could build it for $7 million, the idea is that they would do all the construction for $7
million. Thank you. But that okay. determination Thank is made by DelDOT. Is that?
Sure.
Well, yeah.
The dollars.
I'm just reconfirming because I know there's still a lot of question marks regarding this infrastructure. And, you know, in the end, if it ends up being a $20 million number to do it, quote unquote, the right way,
then the developer is offered $8 million.
And so, therefore, you all would make that decision regarding that number. Correct. Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Any more questions of council?
No.
Okay. We'll entertain a motion then to defer.
I'll make that motion.
Right. And
wait a minute, Mr. Cole. Go ahead.
Right. I was just gonna suggest we have not gotten any recommendations from planning and zoning.
Correct.
And I would just suggest that we leave the record open. In case, with all this information, if there's case there's anything out there that would like to come in, we may as well leave it open until we get a recommendation from planning and zoning. And then we can close it.
For who?
Huh?
For who? What?
Leave any, it open for who?
Any, just leave the record open. I would leave it open. Any more testimony on this application?
I would recommend that we close, number one, close the public hearing. And then secondly, if you are going to leave the public record open, that you would do it for a specific purpose and specific time period. And then after that, if you do leave it open for those specific items, give a period of 10 to 15 days for anyone reading that to be able, in writing, respond to us.
The trouble is, Everett,
we're going to close the public hearing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now let us talk about public comment. Mr. Cole. Mm-hmm.
Just the concern I have, there has been so much information put in front of us. Mm-hmm. How I could sit here and shoot from the hip and try to figure out what I'd like to get, you know, further information on, I may miss a lot. So I would just rather leave the record open for 15 days and see if what happens with that. Because I don't have the ability right now with the time of night and everything else to be able to come up with the specifics of what I'd like to keep it open. Because I've got a lot of notes here, yeah. And there's a heck of a lot put in front of me.
You can call me up tomorrow and we'll talk about it.
I'll call Sam up tomorrow.
If you choose to make that a motion.
I would like to make the motion to leave the record open for 15 days.
For anything in the
world? Just leave the record open.
Yeah.
Well, then you have to have
Do I have a second to that?
I second.
I don't have any problem with that.
Second, Mrs. Deaver. Any questions on that motion?
Well, let's talk about
Mr.
that.
Mr. Arlett?
Because there are two things that I think that, you know, I in my own mind, well, there's a lot of things, but just right this second, there's two things. Number one would be that of the traffic impact. I know that there's been some discussion. Should we ask for more detail? I'm just throwing it out there. The other part was that there's still an element that has yet to get determined, and that was regarding the that a piece of this parcel is a part of the environmental sensitive district or not. Is the whole thing or is only a part of it? I think that's an element we don't have an answer on.
A lot came up that I hadn't heard before.
And I think Mr. Lank was going to further look at that, investigate that, and that's...
Everett, if we leave the record open for 15 days, during that 15 days, could it, questions like Mr. Arlett just had about be put on the table and that we could leave it open
yes,
to get
and,
that information at that
and
point.
That's correct. And the concern of the comp plan, I've had a emailed while we were here, and the assistant county attorney is going to have that information to me in the morning.
Is 15 days enough, or should we do 30 days to leave it open and then to be able to give us some specifics that would then close at 30, and if there's anything specific we could move just for those targeted areas? Would that be better for everybody?
Well,
15 days is fast.
Yeah, but if you give 30 days, then make it 30 days that ends at 30 days, then 15 days for people respond, not 30 days, and then, okay, we're going to opening up or keep it open for additional items.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you know, need to put a time frame.
Everything.
I have learned something new about the farming around that area. That's how I'd like to know more about that.
Mr. Cole, your motion is to do what?
I will make the motion, then I'm going to amend it to make it leave the record open for 30 days.
Second.
And a 15-day period for anyone
day
to respond.
Response.
In writing.
In writing.
Subject to just these new items or just keeping it open in general?
Just open. Open and we'll react to what comes in.
Excuse me, that is not for public. The public hearing's over. That is not for public comment.
Public.
This is for agencies and for the council.
That's correct.
That is.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
Yes.
Yes. So I make that motion.
Motion, Mr. Cole. Second, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
To leave the record open for 30 days for any questions from council, comments from council,
Mr. President,
or responses from agencies.
Yes. So if we have another question or concern regarding these agencies and we want them to come in to report to us, we have this 30-day period to do that. Is that is that an accurate statement?
Yeah.
And then there is no public comment regarding those testimonies from them. No.
Except we're adding in the 15 days that someone could respond in writing. That would not be a public hearing if someone comes here.
Correct.
Well, I have a question about our attitude towards farming and some of the things I heard tonight that I had never thought about. And, you know, how does that fit into our plan? You know, with the information that we had tonight was just new, and I think it's important. So I'd like to, I don't know how you do this, but I'd like to examine our plan and see where we stand as far as the few farmers that are left.
Well, that's part of a different discussion concerning the plan itself.
I know.
You know, we have to focus on this hearing and this project that's before us. And the motion now on the floor that's been seconded has been a 30-day.
30-day.
For the agencies and for the council with a 15-day period of response in writing.
That's correct.
On certain issues.
Whatever issues you want to discuss.
Well, that's included. That'll be included in that.
That can be included.
Yes.
Yeah. Public or applicant.
Yeah. So just for clarification, if at the end of 30 days, whatever comments there are or questions from council have been answered by any agencies, from that point, the 15 days from there would be allowed for the applicant or the opposition to respond to that.
Right.
In writing.
Yeah.
No more public hearing, just in writing.
That would be 15 days after those comments are introduced to council in the public record.
That's correct.
Okay. And I threw the pictures away.
Any more questions from council?
We're going to take a vote.
Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Arlette?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried.
Make a motion to defer? Defer. Yes.
Motion, Mr. Coleman, second Marshal Arlette, to defer.
Yep.
Take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Arlette.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson. I vote yes.
Make a motion
to
adjourn.
Now, motion to adjourn. No.
Second.
Motion, Mr. Cole, second Mr. Arlette, to adjourn. Any questions on that motion?
Halfway home.
Take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Arlette.
Yes, and thank you all for being here.
I vote yes. We are now adjourned. Thank you.